whose arrows trending up at the midway point of fall camp, all that and more coming up next here on the Odds and Audibles podcast. Welcome into the Odds and Audibles podcast. I'm Matt Preem, Eric Scopel on the show, as always, diving into a Tuesday edition of the podcast, which means during fall camp, it's mailbag time. We open up the questions. We dive into your hot topics of what you want discussed. We've got three good ones, I think, going into today's show. And Eric, first of all, we've had a scrimmage. We didn't get to watch the scrimmage, but we got like a somewhat forthcoming Dan Lanning. We've had an opportunity to speak with Oregon's quarterback coach, Koa Kai. We did not get a chocolate or vanilla question in with Koa Kai, which is probably a good thing. You probably appreciated that. But he gave us some good stuff. Dan Lanning gave us some pretty forthcoming stuff about the scrimmage. So we'll dive into some of the questions around that. And that kind of starts us off with our first question of the day.
Yeah, we're going to jump into this one here from Mr. Ed. This is going to be from X. We've got kind of a wide variety of sources for this. This is starting from X, Mr. Ed 3015. In your opinion, whose arrow is pointing north at Duck football preseason camp? Thought this would be kind of a fun one to jump into here. And frankly, Matt, like I feel like I'm stealing what you talked about last week when we talked about on Thursday, kind of like what some of the trending north people might be from your perspective. I think it's some of the younger guys.
Yeah.
And like, especially coming out of Monday where we talked to, you mentioned Koa Kai, but also Tony Tuioti, the defensive line coach. I was struck by the fact that I asked like a follow-up of like, hey, who looked good in the scrimmage? Like what stood up? And he basically listed all the second line guys. He listed Matt Johnson. He wanted to talk about Tank Jones, and we can definitely get into that. He's up to 300 pounds, which blew my mind.
Big jump.
Huge jump. Aiden Breland was a name that he really focused in on. I think that's a player. Maybe if you wanted to just point to one of them, he might be the one to do that with. Of it really feels like from a couple different people we've talked to this camp, he's going to be taking a big step here athletically. He's up to 315 pounds. We know what he can be as a pass rusher. Sounds like he's kind of figuring everything out here in year three. I think that sounded really encouraging. So like for me, I think that's maybe just the natural place to start is some of these younger players. Another one that was talked about with great praise from Koa Kai was KJ, Akili Smith Jr. I am so fascinated by what this looks like. I mean, the more you hear talked about him, and again, we've seen so little, which makes this hard, and we probably won't see much this year either. And so, you know, this is more of like a long-term build, but it sounds like the Anthony Richardson type physical traits, and you just hope the actual quarterbacking takes a step. And it sounds like it has, based upon what the quarterback's coach said on Monday, of just he has all the physical tools, he's figuring it out. Sounded like from a scrimmage perspective, just one turnover by the quarterbacks, and it came on a batted ball. We know that was intercepted by Peyton Woodyard based upon Coach Lanning's comments after the scrimmage. So, you know, just some young guys in the last couple of days that I think have been getting a lot of praise. And certainly you can point to a Nasir Wyatt. I think a Devon Benjamin is a name we just keep hearing over and over again at the nickel star position. It really feels like it's him versus Carl Williams there. So I just think the 25 and 26 classes, and I know a couple of the names I mentioned earlier, like more like 2024 guys with an Aiden Breland or maybe an Elijah Rushing. But, you know, just in general, it feels like they've recruited these positions really, really well the last two cycles. And you're starting to hear some really positive things about these players. And now it's just a matter of what do we see when the ball is snapped for the first time, in about a month and a couple of weeks now. Gosh, it's creeping up. It's getting exciting.
You know, Jalen Lott is another name that we've heard, seen some stuff, seen as in schools put out some videos, whether it's short form stuff on social media or they've put out long form stuff on YouTube, kind of their under construction fall camp series stuff. Jalen Lott's a name that we've seen, we've heard some good things from. There's been some clips here and there, and now take it for what it is. It's the school putting this out there. So, you know, we don't know a lot of the context of it, but Brandon Smith is a true freshman running back.
Yep.
That's been featured. And we should note that Rashad Samples, when Smith joined the team in spring ball, was like, oh yeah, within like 2 days, you quickly figured out that this guy could help. And so it sounds like at least he's carrying that over into fall camp. Is that going to be a case in which he's going to have a De'Aaron Hill, Jordan Davidson kind of impact what they did last season? No, absolutely not. We're not suggesting that. But it certainly seems like this was a three-star guy that's probably playing a little bit above his caliber on paper from the outside. I'm sure Oregon had good ideas that this was going to be a dude. Maybe not this quickly, but nonetheless. Aaron Scott Jr. got a shout out as well during interviews last week as a guy that's really kind of progressing and helping Oregon's secondary and giving them some depth at that position. Dorian Brew and Trey McNutt are two younger players that there's been some flashes, you know, with McNutt in particular. He's coming back from his injury, and same as Dorian Brew, but McNutt, we've spoken with him already, and he's just kind of like, look, I'll do whatever is needed. I'll play wherever. He looks substantially bigger than he was last season. It looks like a guy that could be progressing. And then, you know, I go back to, Eric, the four defensive line guys kind of behind the starters, Matt Johnson, mm-hmm. Aiden Freeland, Elijah Rushing, and then Nasir Wyatt. And you probably could throw in a Tank Jones. You probably could throw in the other Anthony Jones. You could probably throw in a Blue Dancer or Dutch Horsack. But those main four, Nasir Wyatt, Matt Johnson, Aiden Breland, and Elijah Rushing, it all sounds like those guys are – the staff is seeing kind of what they anticipated when they were – okay isn't the right word of letting Ashton Porter and Terrence Green and Tione Gray and Blake Purchase leave through the portal this past offseason, but maybe felt comfortable with, hey, we would love to have these guys stay, but we've got these other four waiting in the wings and we feel like they could do the job. Sounds like those four are kind of doing the job and are kind of at a place where they feel confident. Tony Tuioti spoke really glowingly about Elijah Rushing, his patience, his trust in the process, but also his maturation on the football field physically, being a guy that, remember when he showed up, it was an edge guy. Maybe he's going to be like an outside linebacker, kind of like a Mateo Uyunglele or Tatum Tuioti, who could maybe drop into coverage. But it sounds like he's continued to bulk up. He's kept his speed and kept his athleticism, and he could be an inside-outside guy now for Oregon along the defensive line, which is a huge bonus to have.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that really – and I know we've kind of made this a defensive line discussion, and maybe that just sort of conveys our answer to Mr. Ed's question more clearly, but – you know, it every one of the names you mentioned there, it seems like is able to play multiple spots. And a lot of these guys, like the idea of playing a Tank Jones or an Aiden Breland, guys who are 300 or 300 plus pounds, it sounds like based upon Coach Tuioti's comments. And again, we'll get full roster updates hopefully sometime this week is what we've been told with heights and weights, and fans will get really excited about that. We'll frankly be excited to see the numbers too. But you know, those 300, 315 pound players being able to play both some interior positions, but also a little bit on the edge, you know, in that big end spot in certain situations, like what a luxury to have. And I think you get really excited by what this will look like in 2026 with these players being kind of the second unit. But when you kind of look ahead to 2027, I have a sense that there's going to be a lot of like a feeling of like, man, like I know they're going to lose four guys who could all be day one, day two, you know, first, second, third, fourth round kind of range players, but probably more first, second, and third, that there's just going to be a sense it's not going to be a big drop-off because of what we're hearing here now. And we'll have to see what the season looks like and if all this really comes to fruition. But there just seems to be a lot of juice about this particular group. And I think that gets you, frankly, pretty darn excited about what this can look like for now and also years to come. And you think about where Oregon's had some issues in these big matchups, and not that they've been completely dominated in the trenches, but it hasn't been great. And I guess, you know, the last point I'll make here before we can jump over to the next question, Matt, is, you know, I wish we had a little bit better sense of what's happening with some of the offensive line stuff. And I know Alik gave us a lot of good answers a week ago, you know, about some of the players who are fitting in there. But it feels like there's just a little bit more hype building around some of the younger defensive linemen than the offensive linemen. And maybe that's just who we're talking to on a regular basis. It's probably the case. But it would be nice, I think, at this point to have heard a couple like, hey, Zaire Addison, here's what's happening with him and why you should be really excited about him. Or here's what's going on with Trent Ferguson or Douglas Utu. And I know there were some comments made, but it doesn't feel like maybe to quite the same extent of what we've heard some of these defensive linemen. So I'm not necessarily like a point of concern, but just a kind of a compare and contrast moment, I guess, for me. All right, let's jump into the second question here from at Dylan A. Hoffman over on X. The kicking game is a total unknown, with Oregon needing to replace both its kicker and punter, with also potentially an all-portal specialist unit change. How much does that scare you in a close Big Ten game? I thought this was a good one here from Dylan, because, look, we kind of touched on this throughout the offseason of, like, there's a lot of change going on here. We most recently last week talked about how we were, I guess, excited or intrigued by the fact that Joe Lorig had already noted that, like, hey, they kind of know who the punter is. They know who the kicker is. Like, those felt like good developments that early in camp because it was kind of at the midpoint or a little bit earlier than that probably. And then you come out of the spring game – or sorry, not the spring game, the first fall camp scrimmage, and Dan is kind of bemoaning – they tried a long kick they didn't make. You know, they had a couple of punts that went out of bounds that they wanted to be more directionally accurate. They had a it sounds like a couple kickoffs that weren't landing where they wanted it to be, right? And so all those kind of dynamics are worth talking out here about a team that we maybe buried the lead a little bit, just named number two in the AP poll. It's the highest ranking in school history. Expectations are higher than they've ever been, quite literally, right now around this program and this team. And yet, to Dylan's point, like you do always have to kind of acknowledge it just takes a ball bouncing away here, a ball bouncing another way there, and the game can kind of flip. And so special teams can, to Dan's point, he made this a couple times of like, you know, you only get so many opportunities. It's about getting it right. And it didn't sound like it was right in the first scrimmage. So this would be something to kind of monitor in the second scrimmage. I wish we had eyes on some of this so we could kind of explain what's transpiring and what to be specifically concerned about other than what Coach Lanning is relaying. But certainly a follow-up question after Saturday's scrimmage will be like, hey, did the special teams group take a step? Did they look a little better? Was Gage able to settle in and hit that long field goal? You know, were some of the punts by Bailey or Baz, I think is what they call him, were those improved? You know, just those sort of things. Because, yeah, I mean, I think I look at the way the season's going to play out. You know, there's 12 games on the schedule. I think probably 7 or 8 of them are probably going to be 3-4-plus score games. And then there's a couple of these that are going to be pretty close, right? I think we all expect, obviously, the game with 1-2, Ohio State, Oregon, that game's going to be probably decided in the fourth quarter. I think there's a chance that's what happens in the Coliseum with USC, although I still really like Oregon in that matchup. You know, even some of these games like Michigan late is one that could be sort of like that, especially coming off the ups and downs of what's going to happen in Columbus. I don't expect it to be the case, but, you know, the first and second game of the season are against teams that at least receive votes in the coaches and AP poll, you know, Oklahoma State and Boise State. So, you know, there are some tough potential games here, and if special teams isn't great, like, that could be a problem.
Yeah, I think it's a fair question to ask by Dylan. Is at all, like, special teams lineup hockey change, yeah, right? Where new kicker, new punter, new long snapper. I'm assuming Gage, new punter. I'm assuming Gage is probably going to be the kickoff guy as well. We've seen Dan Lanning and Joe Lorig, Oregon special teams coach, the last couple of years, not be afraid of putting out a different kickoff guy with a different play, you know, field goal kicker or PAT sure. kicker, place kicker. But I'm going to assume Gage is maybe that guy. Maybe Rocco Graziani gets his way into, he's got a big leg as getting an opportunity here and there to kick some kickoffs. Maybe a Keaton Emmett who transferred in from Nevada and before that Western Oregon is a kickoff specialist for you, but
Keaton did have backgrounds in kickoffs, but I think this is what he is more than a place kicker, is a guy with a big leg, so that could be a fit.
So you've got new guys across the board, and I think whether it's portal or like most of these guys are, or in Gage's instance, he's a returner who got some experience last season. Every part of the operation is new. It's not going to be perfect. I think that's the big thing here is if you're Oregon, you probably don't want to find yourself in a situation, probably most realistically down in the Coliseum in late September, mm-hmm. having to have a punter with his back to the end zone make a clutch kick, or a long snapper make sure he doesn't throw it over his head, or probably don't want to have Gage go down the field and have to be nails and drill a 40-yard field goal as time expires to send it to overtime. I would anticipate – I mean, obviously, Oregon's coaches are like, hey, we would love to not punt every single game. That would be the greatest thing in the world. Like, that's not realistic. But what you don't want is you don't want to put these guys into high-pressure situations right out of the jump. Sure, like every once in a while finding one, you know, is okay. But you probably want to ease these guys in because everyone's new. The operation is going to be bumpy. It's just going to be, regardless of their skill level.
Here's a kind of an interesting follow-up. Like what element of this makes you most nervous? Okay, if we're just going to break it down here. And I know we're kind of avoiding the return game, which we'll put off to the side. And I think that was something Dylan had some questions about as well.
Are we, but, I mean, yeah, let's go here and then go there next.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was just going to say, like, are we most worried about Gage, who will be a first-time place kicker and just hasn't done it in a big moment? Bailey, who's 28 years old, but he's only in his second year of playing the sport, right? Like, this is a guy who 18 months ago had picked up an American football before and kicked it around really with any experience. RJ Todd, which is, I think, probably a distant third for me, who's a veteran guy who's only played at Western Michigan, but has, I think I was looking at it, he has like six games in Big Ten venues because Western Michigan always schedules a couple against Big Ten teams. Like, I guess maybe we'll just settle it with the kicker and the punter, but like, do one of those make you a little bit more nervous, Gage versus Bailey, just off the cuff?
Probably Bailey, just because Gage was in the program last year. He did get like 18 kicks or something. Yeah. So I would probably land Bailey, but I don't know, man. I guess, like I said, I would hate to see Gage get thrown out there in a situation where you've got to make a kick with a minute left or less than that for Oregon to stay alive in the game. Like that, we haven't seen a lot of them. So maybe it's probably everyone else but Gage right now, if I had to pick an option.
Yeah,
I've got the most confidence in Gage just because he's a returner. He's done it a little bit in an Oregon uniform.
I do too. I think the interesting thing in this conversation though is like, who's most likely to have a game defining moment, and it's probably the place kicker. So that probably percolates in my head that should be maybe the most concerning part. But to your point, I think you're right. Like, Gage actually has experience in the system. He got a lot of opportunity last year. I mean, not a lot, but he got enough where he's got game experience, right? It's not like you're pulling a guy off the bench who hadn't kicked the ball, you know, in a game of any, you know, consequence at all during his career. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. You had a thought on return though.
Are we really concerned here about the return game? Is there any reason? I mean, we don't know yet who it's going to be. I think it's probably going to be a plethora of options. You know, DeCorian Moore is certainly one that's going to have a ton of interest. Jalen Lott is another one that's going to have a ton of interest. Jeremiah McClellan, Iverson Hooks, even Evan Stewart. It wouldn't surprise me if we see a De'Aaron Hill back there. It wouldn't surprise me if we see Jordan Davidson back there. Jadarian Ball. I think they've got so many options back here that I'm not really worried in the slightest right now. I think the big play ability is there from a lot of guys that could do this job. And I think it's always been, and it will always be with Lanning, first of all, ball security. You know, protect the ball, don't put it on the ground. But I just think the big play threat here, I'm not really worried about this spot.
I think there's a lot of big play potential here and a lot of I mean, like from a roster perspective in general, and we had a question in a second here, which would be kind of fun to talk about maybe in this context of just the level of athlete on the roster and how it's changed even in the last couple of years. But I agree with that. I also will say, like, DeCorian and Dier both returned a little bit last year and had some really scary moments where they muffed the ball, or the ball was, you know, they recovered it, but maybe they shouldn't have, like, even in the spring game. Sure. Actually, with Dier was most recent. So I don't have any question that there's a bunch of guys in this team that could make a house call off a punt or a kick return. But I'm also wary a little bit, like, who's the most reliable. But at the same time, there's a lot of really good receivers on this team, and I don't have a whole lot of doubt that they'll figure this out eventually. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's a moment or two early where it's like they're trying guys, and maybe a player makes an aggressive decision that's costly, or just a moment of, I guess lack of focus, and then the ball's on the turf and we're talking about it. But yeah, I feel best probably about that in terms of the special teams unit of all the ones we've got. All right, gonna jump over to the third one here. This is from the Duck Territory Duck Pond message board from LJMO. Who do you think would win a game between the Oregon team with Bo Nix in 2023 versus the Oregon team with Dante Moore in 2026? Compare the position groups and pick an overall winner, please. I thought this was kind of a fun one, Matt. Because I think you could make a case the 23 team maybe was the most talented team prior to this that Dan's had. You know, 24 and 25 certainly have cases. 24 achieved more than 23. You know, the 23 team would have been in the playoff if they'd expanded it a year early, right? And so we kind of don't have a sense of the ceiling and where that would have gone. But we do know that the team that played Michigan for the national championship, Washington, was a team that Oregon was within 3 points of beating twice that season. So, like, I think the ceiling of that team was really, really high. So I think this is kind of a fun exercise. And I think the reason we're focused on this one from LJMO is the Bo in year two versus the Dante in year two of it. So do you want to just run through this position by position and offer some thoughts and then kind of finish with an answer? Does that sound good?
Do we want to go, like, day one depth chart for 2023, or do we want to go like the Oregon State depth chart in 2023? Because I think those two teams are probably a little bit different.
I think we have to go day one because we're going day one 2026, right? Like,
okay.
So let's start with that. Yeah.
So that would be the Portland State game.
Yeah. Quarterback, Bo Nix versus Dante Moore. I think this feels to be a little bit pushy considering what they both, I mean, like, we've done this before, but, like, you pull up the stats between 2023, right, Bo Nix, or 2022 Bo Nix, and 2025 Dante Moore, and they're basically identical. So it's a question of, like, who's going to take that bigger step. I'm just going to say it's a push because they're both coming off such similar seasons. If you want to make the case, Bo's better. I mean, certainly Bo by the end of 2023 had, I think, statistically the best passing season the school's ever had. So if you want to tell me that's a step too far for Dante, go ahead. I also think, like, going into the season, which is the way we're approaching this, there's every reason to think that Dante, coming off the year he had, could have a season as good as what Bo just had, especially with some of the skill talent around him, which we'll talk about. Do you agree with that, or would you lean Bo over Dante?
I would call it a push, but if I was forced to pick one, I would take Bo.
It's probably the right way of putting it. Yeah, I'm probably the same. Okay, how about running back? And running back, Matt, is interesting here. So, like, the top two players in 2023 were Bucky Irving and Noah Whittington going into the season. Whittington gets hurt, but we're focusing on day one. Jordan James was also in that group. Jordan and Noah were kind of battling. I kind of think I like the 23 group a little better, maybe not at the very top, although I think Bucky is just as good of a player as any of these guys. And frankly, maybe I do like him better than either of them, at least based upon what we've seen to this point, because I'm a Bucky Irving truther over here. But the depth of it, I think, makes me lean 2023 running backs, because I think Bucky, Jordan, and Noah probably is better than Jordan, Dier, and whoever RB3 is.
I think Bucky's the best running back of them all. So
I think I agree.
So I would go 2023, and then I think the depth is also better. I think if we need to revisit this question at the end of 2026, and
yeah,
our answers might drastically or slightly change. Maybe Bucky still is the best back, but you could maybe make a strong case that if De'Aaron Hill and Jordan Davidson have the years that we kind of think they're going to have, they're probably both going to be better than Noah Whittington and Jordan James was in 2023.
That's probably fair as well. There's a lot of growth potential, and all we've heard all offseason is about how these guys are just getting better and better. Right. I think with Bucky, there's just something from an intangible like vision and shiftiness and acceleration and quickness that was just a little different than what we're seeing here. And that, again, doesn't mean that we'll feel that way coming out of the season. I really hold what he did in high esteem. I'm a big fan of how he plays the game. Okay,
receiver. Real quick, one guy is a starting NFL running back. Like, mm-hmm. That's the bar that Jordan Davidson and De'Aaron Hill have to beat, is becoming a starting running back at the NFL level. So and if I think you beat that, you're really, really good.
And I think it's totally plausible both of those guys could be starting running backs in the NFL at some point. I think that's totally on the table. There's no question that's on the table. Those guys are also entering year two of college football. And I think Bucky was entering his, redshirt junior season. Or no, it's just true junior, his third year. He didn't redshirt at Minnesota. He came straight over. Wide receiver is really interesting for me, Matt, because Troy Franklin and Tez Johnson just like broke all the school records that year, right? Gary Bryant was in the slot. They also had Trayshawn Holden. Those are kind of the four names, right? Troy, Tez, Trayshawn, Gary. And I think going into the season, I would suggest that the 2026 team probably has more firepower with the ceiling of what Evan Stewart can be, I think, surpassing what we knew of Troy Franklin at that time, going into the 23 season at least, with what we think Jeremiah can be, probably surpassing kind of some question marks maybe we had at this time about Tez and his fit. I misspoke earlier. Tez is in the slot and Gary and Trayshawn were on the outside. I apologize for that. Jeremiah also kind of fitting in this conversation. Iverson Hooks. I think I'm going to call this a push right now probably, or maybe even lean 26, but to actually achieve being the better receiving core, 26 guys are going to have to do some crazy stuff, because these guys in 2023 – over 1,000 yards receiving, you know, set the school records and receptions, receiving yards, receiving touchdowns between the two of them with Troy and Tez. So like it's tough, but I think I might lean 2026 or a push, but gosh, to actually get there by the end of the season, which is how we're, you know, not how we're approaching this. It's going to be, I think you mentioned earlier, Matt, it would be worth revisiting this after the season just to see where we land. But I think I might like this year's group a little better on paper, at least.
I think this year's unit has a higher ceiling, and that's because there's more options. I still go back, though, to, again, Troy Franklin and Tez Johnson are two starting receivers in the NFL right now. I think DeCorian Moore is going to be an NFL guy. I think Evan Stewart's going to be an NFL guy. I think Jeremiah McClellan's going to be an NFL guy. But are they – do I view them as starters day year one, year two at their respected positions? I don't know. I think a lot of these guys are probably in that sphere of where Troy Franklin was entering 2022, or where Tez Johnson was entering in 2025, where it was kind of like, okay, you're established. Now you need to take the jump from good to elite. And Tez obviously wasn't known to be elite in 2023 yet, but it became very evident very quickly he was. I think there's probably more depth in 2026, because if you look at Chris Hudson, you look at Justice Lowe, Kyle Casper, Jurion Dickey was in that group, Ashton Cozart was also in that group, Josh Delgado was in that group. Those guys really didn't play, and it was really a four-man rotation. Troy Franklin, Tez Johnson, Trayshawn Holden, Gary Bryant Jr. Those were kind of your four guys that you rotated with. Maybe a Chris Hudson every now and then, maybe a Justice Lowe every now and then. But for the most part, it was four guys. I think this year's unit doesn't have the top guy that Oregon had in that year in Troy Franklin, but they've got more number twos. And so I think the depth is better, but I think the top end talent, I would almost land with 2023 slightly.
I'm going to push back a little bit. I think because Troy was a fourth round pick and Tez is a seventh round pick, and yes, they're both getting opportunity in the NFL, but it's not like distinctly incredible in either case. And I think between Evan Stewart, DeCorey Moore, and Jeremiah McClellan, I think all three of those guys have a chance to be taken round four or better. Like I think there is maybe more high end number one talent here than we're giving it credit for in this conversation to a certain extent. It's hard though, because again, the 2023 season, like these two players in Troy and Tez produced like arguably the two best seasons of Oregon receivers of all time. So it's hard to pick 2026 over that when there's only one football. And I'm pretty skeptical you're going to have 2,000 yard receivers on this year's team. So like from a production point, I don't know if I'll reach that. I think from like an individual talent perspective, like I think Evan and DeCorey and Jeremiah can all be drafted about where Troy was, if not better. So like this position is probably one of the more difficult ones we're going to do the whole time. And I think you could really go either way, but you lean 23, I probably lean 26. I think we're both like just open and honest about like, it's really a strength for both teams was the receiving group. And it's, I think it speaks a lot to the way this program has developed this position that you can kind of say like, hey, 2026 could match 2023 or even be better based upon what was on that 23 team and what they achieved offensively.
I definitely think 2026, when we revisit this at the end of the year, I think my answer will change. Like,
yeah,
I really think this group's going to be really, really good. I just don't think day one yet they're the same.
All right, let's move to tight end, which is an interesting one. I think this one to me is, and maybe you disagree, Matt, I think 2023, just because we knew more of what they had, but now I'm kind of thinking this through going, okay, it was T. Ferg entering his third season and he was pretty established, but not like superstar levels. And Jamari Johnson in 2025 had a more significant individual season than what T. Ferg had in 2022. So that's kind of leans that direction. That team also had Herbert. It had a freshman Kenyon Sadiq who really didn't play. People forget how much he took a step every year here from freshman to sophomore to junior. Casey Kelly was on this group. And I don't necessarily think super highly of him. So I think the more I'm talking myself into this, I was initially going to be like, it's probably 2023. 2026, I think I probably like Jamari better than Terrence Ferguson. And there's more experience depth because Herbert and Casey Kelly were like, at least had played quite a bit of football to that point. But like, I think the ceiling of Kendre Harrison and Andrew Olesh and both of Marcus Dixon as the veteran there is probably higher than those guys. So I'm kind of inclined to go 26, even though in my notes I'd written 23, the more I talk it out.
I think I'm going to go 26. I think Jamari Johnson is the best returning player entering the year of any of these guys. Terrence Ferguson was really solid, like you noted, but he hadn't made that jump yet where we were thinking NFL first round, second round, third round type discussion. We're hearing even before last season was over, Jamari Johnson had first round potential.
Yeah.
If he wanted to go out into the draft. We didn't get that same kind of buzz about Terrence Ferguson. I think Kendre Harrison's probably just as like projectable as Kenyon Sadiq was entering the season. And then it turns into, well, who do you have? What, you know, Patrick Herbert, I love the story. I love the kid. The guy, you know, gave everything for Oregon. He's on the Jaguar roster, I believe, right now. But remember, he was still like his 2022 season was more of, hey, you got through the year. You fought through the injuries. You survived it. You made it healthy. 2023 will be your year when you have an opportunity to take a jump and be able to be productive and carve out a true role and skill set for this offense. for you. So I lean 2026. I think they've got the best player, and I think they've got the same kind of projectables from the guys behind them.
I think the only case to 23 would just be that there's a little bit more playing experience with Herbert and Kelly being guys who had played a little bit to that point. Kelly not at Oregon. He transferred over from Ole Miss, but it had played a little bit, had a little bit of something to rely on. Whereas you look at the group after Jamari, and the stat I've thrown out numerous times is like no one else has a reception even at this point. Like Olesh didn't play at all last year. Harrison's brand new. We haven't mentioned AJ Pugliano, but he's in year three and he hasn't played a snap yet. You know, Dixon was playing defense at Clemson last year. So you could talk it out and say the depth was certainly more established in 23, but I think I agree. I think I'd go 26 just with Jamari and kind of the ceiling of what some of this could look like. Offensive line is really fascinating when you look at it from the perspective of the start of the 2023 season. Because I think when you go through it and you go, okay, it was Josh Connerly, Marcus Harper, JPJ, Stephen Jones, and Johnny Cornelius, you go, well, there's like two guys that were first or second round picks in this group. There's a Johnny who was, you know, he's on an NFL roster, was drafted. Like, surely that group probably is superior. And maybe that's where we'll land. But you also have to realize, like, there's kind of a lot of similarities in terms of what was being replaced in 2023 as opposed to in 2026. Like, JPJ, I don't know if people always remember this. He was a one-year starter, basically. Yep. And he was coming into 2023 as somebody who'd made a couple of, like, two or three starts into his career. He was kind of an unknown. Obviously, he goes on to win the Remington, ends up being, you know, taken in the second round by the Raiders. He's had kind of an up-and-down NFL career. It's actually been a little bit different than how I'd expected. I thought he was going to be a star immediately. But, you know, he was kind of, like, unprojectable. Josh Connerly, five-star recruit. He hadn't started a game until 2023. Johnny Cornelius was coming from FCS Rhode Island. Stephen Jones and Marcus Harper had both started, you know, a dozen or so games coming into the season. They were kind of known commodities. But I almost feel like this year's group with Poncho and Ayuli almost has more reliable returners than what we knew of at least entering the 2023 season when it's Harper and Jones. So I think I'm going to call it a push because – I couldn't even tell you who's going to be starting in 2026. I just like know there's two guys returning who we like, and it feels like it could be a super, you know, a large variety of options around him, around those two guys. But it's probably closer than I thought on first glance, because at first glance you're going, well, JPJ, Josh Connerly, and Johnny Cornelius, those guys all got drafted. Two of those guys were early picks that are starting in the NFL. Like, it's a no brainer, but you know, they weren't necessarily known to be that when that season started.
Yeah, I think it's a push. I think this is a pretty easy one, quick one to pull through. There's just so many questions for both sides. So
yeah,
it's going to be a push.
All right, defense, where I think we're going to end up leaning 2026 a lot. At least that's where I'm at. I mean, the defensive line, Jordan Birch, Popo Amavai, Taki Taimani, Brandon Dorlis. They also had Young Tatum and Young Mateo on this team as well. They had Casey Rogers, they had Kian Ware Hudson, Young Amari was on this team. I'm thinking this 2026 group, and we just talked about the depth, and we already know the starters. Like, this could be the quickest response. I think it's this year's team.
Hands down. I'm picking the defense this year. Dorlis was a stud. Casey Rogers obviously turned into one. Yep. Popo was a grad transfer, but you just look at the three guys up front, and then they had the two outside edge guys that, you know, there's more NFL talent on the starting unit for 2026, and there's more NFL talent waiting in the wings too. So I think it's 2026 hands down.
Linebacker is kind of interesting, and to me this is maybe a push. You can tell me if you disagree. It was Bassa entering year three, and so he'd already made I think 15 16 something like that starts coming into that. Bryce Betcher was on the team, but really was just a special teams guy in 2022, played safety. He was making the move over to linebacker. The same was true of Jamal Hill. Justin Jacobs was supposed to be something, and he'd come over from Iowa. There was hype, so maybe you could say the Justin Jacobs hype maybe overrides what we're seeing from some of these other guys. But like, I think just on paper, Bassa to me isn't necessarily a step up from Jerry Mixon. I don't think he's necessarily worse. And on the other spot, like if you want to say it's Jamal Hill or Justin Jacobs or even Bryce, who, again, people forget like 2024 and 25 was really when this thing picked up for him. You could make the case, but I think it's a push. And strangely, because we've talked so, I don't want to say negatively, but we've been so critical and kind of concerned about the linebackers in 26. Like if I was to lean, I you could probably convince me 26 is actually maybe better than it was in 23.
I feel like Bosa was head and shoulders more successful, viewed as a better player than anyone on the 2026 roster. I think Jerry Mixon's a very good linebacker. I think Bosa's profile was higher than where Mixon is at right now. I think Jamal Hill, while maybe he was transitioning to linebacker that season, this was a guy that had 22 starts on defense the three previous seasons. So he was experienced. He knew it was the Eddie Pleasant move, right? Of bumping him from a star linebacker or star safety to putting him up in the box. So I probably have more experience there too. Production, certainly. But then the other side of it is, well, Devin Jackson was coming off a redshirt. Bryce Betcher played in 12 games as a special teams guy, like you said. Justin Jacobs was a guy coming off an injury. And then Connor Soley, remember him, like came from ASU but really didn't do much. I don't know if I can say I would take 2026, but I also would say I don't know if I can say 2023 was better. They probably had the more – established player in Jeffrey Bosa, but I don't know how much higher he is going to be than Jerry Mixon is right now. So I would call it a push. I would say it's a push.
Yeah, it's funny going through this because then I'm having to go through like my mind agrees, but I'm just pulling this up. And I think to that point in their careers, Devin Jackson has more career tackles than Jeff Bosa did to this point, which if I'm looking at this right, which is just sort of surprising to me. Let's see here. Cause there's 108 versus 106. So actually it's basically identical. It's 108 for Bosa, 106 for Jackson, if I'm looking at this right. So like, I think we all agree Bosa is a better player. And Jackson did that in 3 years as opposed to two. But the production returning is actually closer than I thought. Because I was just looking through this going like, yeah, I think you're right. Like Bosa, I probably shortchanged him a little bit there. Just because ultimately like his career never really took the path I thought it might in terms of where it might have gone. But yeah, I think it's a push, and I don't know if I could really say I'd take 26 over it based upon the potential of Devin Jackson, which hasn't been reached. And we've just heard a lot of positivity around him around fall camp, and maybe that's sort of clouding my judgment. So push or 2023, what are we saying there?
I'm going to say push.
Okay. Defensive backs, as a reminder, here's who was starting in 2026. They had Kyrie Jackson and Jaleel Florence and Tre'Quest Bridges and Dante Manning is kind of like the four guys that they were looking at. Ultimately, Kyrie and Florence kind of emerged as the season played out. You had Steve Stevens and Evan Williams as your deep safety and Tysheem Johnson as your nickel. I think 26 is a landslide win, yes, potentially here. I mean, this really stood out to me of like the growth they've had at this position group over that time, just of the young talent and excitement that you've got. I mean, all those guys I ran through at that point were like seniors or veteran players, essentially, with the exception of Jaleel. And this year's group is a lot younger, so you could maybe make a case there. But like the ceiling of this year's group, with the number of big-time recruits and the length and athleticism they have, and Coy Parrish being undeniably more established than these guys, Brandon Finney being more established than these guys, I think it's pretty easy for me.
So remember, Evan Williams was not the Evan Williams that's currently starting for the Green Bay Packers. He hadn't turned into that guy. He was a very productive player at Fresno State, but he used his senior year at Oregon to kind of vault him into that position. Dante Manning wasn't the Dante Manning he was the next season. Same with Nico Reed. Nico Reed like hardly played, I think, in 2023, and then became kind of the nickel NFL future guy in 2024. Bridges ended up transferring because of his lack of opportunity at Oregon. Ryan Addison did the same thing. Tyler Turner right behind him did the same thing. Cody Canberra right behind him did the same thing. So, you know, I look at 2026 and go, okay, well, Brandon Finney's an NFL dude. Like, we know that pretty mm-hmm. confidently. He's sure. got all American potential going into this season. Ife Obadegwu's got all Big Ten potential, returning starter. Naeem Offord played a ton of football. Aaron Scott transferred over from Ohio State, but is an established veteran player. And then at the safety spots, you've got Coy Parrish, who was an all-conference player in the Big Ten at Minnesota. You've got Aaron Flowers, who was a starter for you last season, played the third most snaps on defense as a redshirt freshman. And maybe behind him, behind the two safeties, you go, okay, well, how established is Peyton Woodyard, or what are you going to get out of a Trey McNutt or Xavier Lurice or a Jet Washington, kind of young guys that haven't played any football yet? Sure, maybe there's depth questions there, but from an overall standpoint, I think 2026, it's a cakewalk almost. They just dominate.
Did we want to do specialists?
Well, I think it's easy. Like, for me at least, I'm not even really going to consider it. I'm just going to take 2023 just with right out the gun, just because it's a proven product. I mean, you've got a returning starter at snapper in Luke Basso. Luke Dunn was a solid punter for you. Ross James also punted, I believe. You had Andrew Boyle and Camden Lewis with kickoffs, and Camden Lewis was solid for place kicking. We just don't know anything about the 2026 group. And again, much like other positions, like, we might say at the end of the year, oh yeah, this group was way better. We just don't know. There's so many unknowns.
All right. So this is the recap I have written down from what we said. You can correct me if I got any of this wrong. Quarterback, we had a push. I think we both agreed, probably lean bow. 2023 for running back, I think we both agreed on that. Receiver, did we say push, or I wrote 26 down? But I think
we'll go 2026.
I think that one is really up for debate. And tight end, we both ended up at 2026 as well, even though there's a case. Offensive line, I think we said push, and I think I'd lean 23 if I was forced to lean, even though I think they're probably more comparable than you'd think just when the conversation starts, because you remember how good that group was. That was the first Joe Moore Award finalist group. D-line is an easy 2026. Linebacker is a push. DB is an easy 2026. Special teams, easy 2023. So I think if I'm just going through all this, we've got three pushes, four 2026s, and two 2023s, which leads me to believe we will crown 2026 the winner of this game. Does that smell right to you?
I think so. I think 2023 probably has the best overall player in Bo Nix. I think Dante Moore can claim that title too, with what we see in 2026 transpire play out. But going in, I would probably say Bo is probably the better quarterback, but has a much lower ceiling than Dante Moore. Going into the year. But I also would think that 2026 overall, this is why they're number two in the country, right? Like,
yeah.
both polls, there's a lot of expectations, a lot of hype around this group. And so I would lean 2026 winning.
And just the last thing I'll say, super fun exercise. I'm happy someone brought this to us. It's also, this is challenging in the context of, we've seen the 2023 season play out. We know who was good, who wasn't good in that season. Like, I think going into 2023, we all thought Justin Jacobs was going to be a really good player. That didn't happen, right? Like, so, like, there's a level of that. Like, I don't know if we expected Troy Franklin and Tez Johnson to set the world on fire in 2023, and then they did. 2026, we have expectations. We think we know who's going to be good. We think we know which position groups are going to be standouts. Could prove to be wrong on some of that. So it's a case of reflecting on one group and projecting on another. And that always just kind of makes it a little bit inaccurate. At the same time, like, I think I crowned the 2026 team a little better than the 2023 team. And I'm sure you can go out if you really want to and play this on the new college football video game and give us a sense of who's actually better based upon how that would play out. And that'd probably be a fun exercise. So maybe somebody can, one of our listeners or viewers can do that and report back. But curious on takes from fans on where they land on this, if they agree, they disagree, where if they have a strong opinion one way or the other.
All right, well, thanks for watching on YouTube and listening to wherever you get your podcasts. For fans of this podcast, we've got a special treat. Use their promo code DUCKS60 on the bottom of your screen to get 60% off an annual subscription to DuckTerritory.com. That also can be used for you fans out there who are listening on podcasts. Just type in the promo code DUCKS60, where you can get the latest recruiting ranking, transfer portal updates, and wall-to-wall coverage of Oregon athletics here at DuckTerritory.com. But until the next one, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.
Sunday, the NFL on CBS is back with an electrifying Week 1 doubleheader. I see you on Sunday. The early slate features Josh Allen and the Bills taking on C.J. Stroud and the Texans in Houston. Then it's a classic NFC North battle as Jordan Love and the Packers visit the Vikings. It all kicks off at noon Eastern with the NFL Today, live in Minnesota. See you Sunday with the NFL on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.